right, good friends. Welcome back. This is hour number two here on INN War Report Radio on We the People Radio Network. Every Sunday night, 8 until 10 p.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Tom Kiley, and I come to you via our television offering as well, INN War Report, the television news broadcast, the independent television news broadcast. This is not corporate media. This is the alternative media, good friends. And we bring you what we like to say is the news the networks won't tell you. And you can watch our television offering as well. If you've got Dish Network, that's great, because we're on Dish Network's channel 9415, their free speech TV channel. But that's okay. If you don't have Dish, there are many, many other ways you can watch INN World Report, the television nightly news broadcast. Check our website, for instance. If you go to innworldreport.net, if you go to the schedule page, you can find many, many cable access stations, community access stations, college stations around the country that rebroadcast our program. So there's a good chance in your area you can get it on cable if you don't have Dish. And then finally, you can go to our website and watch the program as well, innworldreport.net. And there are all of our broadcasts are on there. You can watch it if you missed one. And then finally, also on YouTube, a lot of our reports are on YouTube. Go to YouTube and search for INN War Report. And you'll be surprised. There's probably 100 of them or so up there like that. We're going to be speaking in this hour about energy and gasoline and a sensible energy policy and so forth. We're contacting for you Francis Beinecke of the Natural Resources Defense Council. And I believe, let's see here. I think, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties, I guess. So I'm going to vamp a little bit here, and we're going to be talking about what's going on with the energy policy. You know, it seems like, good friends, the situation, obviously, because we didn't do what we were supposed to do years ago when we had a chance, it just continues to deteriorate. And are we hearing new solutions coming out of Congress or not? That's the subject that we're going to talk about right now with Francis Beinecke. Francis, how are things? I know you're up in the Adirondacks in the mountains of New York. How are things up in the Adirondacks this evening?
Hi, Tom. They're just great. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Thank you for joining us. Francis, your organization is the Natural Resources Defense Council. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're a national... let me tell you about NRDC. We're a national environmental advocacy organization working to put in place solutions to our most serious environmental problems, from global warming to the depletion of the oceans. We have over a million members and activists all over the country, and we're staffed by lawyers and scientists in New York, Washington, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and we even have recently opened an office in China.
It would seem that China has a lot of work to do to help out with the situation as well. So congratulations on your new office in China.
Yeah, well, we have huge things to do there, as you can tell from all the coverage on the Olympics and the air pollution issues.
Oh, I can tell you, I've traveled in Thailand and in India, and I can tell you that years ago, 15 years ago in Thailand, they don't have the kind of regulations that we have, the kind of regulations, frankly, that are often decried by corporate interests, and they don't have them there, and it was the air pollution was just absolutely incredible. You could cut it with a knife. There were all kinds of respiratory problems as a result. There, literally, I would be waiting on a corner, and, you know, they had these two-stroke engines on the little motorbikes and stuff. There'd be 50 of them waiting at the corner. The light would change. It'd all gun at the same time. A black cloud would rise up. Unbelievable. Anyhow, I hope that's been improving. But I digress. Let's talk, Francis, about both from a historical perspective and what's going on right now. We really haven't been doing what we needed to do all these years since the first oil shocks of the 70s, have we? And now it seems that we're paying the piper, the chickens are coming home to roost, and we're getting some lame-o suggestions from our politicians on how to deal with the situation, the same politicians who did nothing for all these years. Does that about frame the picture as far as you're concerned?
No, I think, Tom, you have it exactly right. We experienced an oil shock in the early 70s, and policies were put in place at that time, particularly by President Carter, to get us on a new energy pathway. There was a lot of investment at the time in conservation, improved fuel efficiency, in renewables. And then in the 80s, when the Reagan administration and then the two Bush administrations came in, many of those policies were reversed. So we missed the opportunity then. Again, in after 9/11, there was a lot of talk about our dependence on foreign oil and the need to really head in a new direction. We missed that opportunity as well. And now here we are in 2008. With prices going through the roof, the American consumer is screaming, and the solutions that are coming, or the proposals, I should say, that are coming out of Washington are really not solutions. They're looking backwards rather than forwards, and we really need to change the conversation.
So let's go back to the beginning. I, in our pre-interview, I discussed with you, I was a young man in the military. I was stationed in Berlin at the time. I was overseas, and we heard about this terrible oil shock that hit the U.S. I guess it had to do with events in the Middle East and so forth. And we couldn't imagine it. There were lines. Gas went up over $1 a gallon. We said two things. First, we said we got to get off oil finally. And then we also said among ourselves, the GIs, we said, well, I guess the next war is going to be over oil. Richard Nixon was the president. And to his credit, even he recognized the dangers that the country was in. He called it, I think, a strategic interest, in fact, that we were so dependent on foreign oil. Didn't it start with him, the initial first steps toward coming up with alternative energies and conservation and so forth?
It did begin with him, but I think that under President Carter, there were a lot more policies put in place. And, you know, what happened, there was an expectation at the time that the price of oil would go up and up. And so a lot of the policies were put in place with the idea that they would be competitive with the price of oil. And then what really happened in the 80s is the price of oil dropped significantly. It had gone up, and then it dropped significantly. So the incentives that were there to look at alternatives that perhaps they were costly at the time, but they were expected to be competitive with oil, and then they weren't. And so, you know, the oil markets dropped, and the incentives to make those additional investments just totally vanished, as well as the policies that were encouraging them. So we missed an opportunity, and we really now are experiencing the consequences, because what's really happened on the global oil market is that we're no longer the main game in town. There's tremendous growth in vehicle use all over the developing world, particularly in China and in India, as well as other places, too. So, you know, we can't really call the shots here anymore, and we have to figure out what is America's energy future going to be. We're now using 25% of the world's oil, but we have 3% of the reserves. So we can't drill our way out of this. We have to be looking for other technologies, other strategies.
And we've had to have been looking for those all along. But as you aptly point out, because the crisis seemed to have abated, anybody with a brain can tell you, you know, there's more and more people every day that are using oil. There's only a limited amount of it in the ground. We should thank our lucky stars that we have this respite where we could sort of gear up for the future. And it seems like, you think it was purely market forces, or do you also think that there was influence being lobbied from oil interests who stood to make out if these alternative sources were not developed? You think they played a part? Because I can think about politicians not doing the right thing time and time and time again when it came, for instance, to fuel efficiency standards in automobiles.
No, you're exactly right on that. I mean, it's definitely a combination of both. The oil industry, as we know, has a very, very strong relationship with a lot of members of Congress, and that relationship has benefited them. They also have a strong relationship with the president and the vice president, who are both from the oil industry. So these relationships shape policy very, very strongly, and they have for decades. And, you know, now we're again experiencing that, where the Bush administration has a few months left, and they are working very avidly to ensure that the oil industry that they have a close relationship with is getting the maximum benefits before they get out of town.
You know, you say, you mentioned the Reagan administration. That you had Nixon, you had Ford, you had Carter. All three of them, you know, in their own way, you know, promoting the search for alternative fuels and how to conserve. You know, it's sort of a two-pronged effort there. And then, as you point out, it all came to a bit of a screech. Well, it all came to a screeching halt, in my opinion, when Ronald Reagan became the president. There were, for instance, tax credits that could be applied for insulating your home. That seems to be a very, you know, noble goal, a laudable tax credit to offer people. If you make a home more energy efficient, you know, that the government will give you a credit on some of that cost. And then that was shot down when Reagan was the president. How much of that do you think was due to Ronald Reagan himself, and how much of that do you think was due to the fact that his vice president, George H. Bush, was, you know, in bed with the oil industry?
Well, I think, you know, I think that the party has a relationship with the oil industry that's certainly clear with the political theater that's going taking place now in the House of Representatives, where the Republicans are, you know, every day calling for the House to come back and vote to open the offshore reserves. And that's just, that's been a continuing and long-term relationship. And I don't think it's necessarily with any one individual. I think it's with many, many, many. And, you know, the members of Congress who are now on the floor, the Republican members asking for Congress to come back and vote on oil, have received over $10 million of contributions from the oil industry, which is documented in the you know, Federal Election Commission data. So, you know, it's a broad relationship. It doesn't depend on any one person. And I think that the conversation that the country ought to be having right now is, what is our energy future? What should it be? And how do we move and transition to get it in place? One, so that the consumers aren't so vulnerable to price shocks, and two, so the nation isn't so dependent on a fuel that we can't supply. And, you know, that, I think, the combination of those two factors is a very, very serious concern for the country, because this isn't something that we can control. We don't own it. And we've got to really figure out what is an energy future and how do we use those abundant supplies that are available to us, which is the sun and the wind, which many other countries have gotten on board with, and we haven't. We're, you know, we're not in the lead here. We're really in the back of the line, and we need to really change what our policies are and change them quickly and develop an energy program for the 21st century, not one that's coming out of the 19th. And that's really what we're facing right now. And I think there are lots of ways to do it, and there are many, you know, people who are, you know, inventors, entrepreneurs in the business, we're just champing at the bit to have an opportunity to really show what they could do. But the policies are not structured to do that, and the conversation in Congress isn't structured to do that. And that's where I think people all around the country really need to talk to their members of Congress and really demand a different future than the one that they're getting.
Well, you know, I would add a third point to the two powerful ones that you mentioned already. Yes, the oil is in limited supply. Yes, it's not all within our grasp. It's we depend on foreign sources for it. But even if that wasn't the case, even if it was coming back, coming up out of everybody's backyard, like we saw in the Beverly Hillbillies, if you remember that
program,
the way that started, even if that was the case, there's a third factor, isn't there? And the fact is that the stuff turns the air into something that you can't breathe. It's not good for the environment, and over time, it just gets worse and worse and worse. You know, I like to remember what Buckminster Fuller said, if I'm not mistaken. Very brilliant man. He invented the geodesic dome, and he was all into all kinds of natural sources of energy and so forth. And he said, folks, fossil fuel is like the battery in our car. It's intended to get our civilization started when it comes to powering what we need to do, but it's not intended for us to be running on it. He said, just like the battery in a car gets your car started, if you don't have a generator that kicks in perpetually after that and you try to just run on the battery is going to run out at some point in the future.
Well, I think that's what we're faced with. We're, you know, it's a fuel that's in limited supply, and we don't have it. And it is polluting. You're absolutely right. It's the second largest source of global warming pollution comes from cars. First comes from power plants. So there's a lot of reasons to be looking at new technologies in a different future as far as transportation goes. And I think, you know, that's the conversation that's not happening, and that's the one that the public should be demanding.
Well, I want to continue on this theme for a minute, but we're coming up on break in a little over a minute now. But on the other side of the break, Francis, let's talk about this political theater that's going on in Washington. But just to sum up, there's no question, is there, that there's the politicians have been, if you ask me, bought off both sides of the aisle. Okay, this is not just a Republican or Democrat issue. I think there's politicians on both sides that have been given all kinds of campaign contributions over the years, and it seems so hard to do the right thing in Washington, whether it's CAFE standards or what have you.
I think that's right, and, you know, we have, you know, we think we're on the verge of a breakthrough, and then things head in the other direction, and that's what's happening right now, and that's what we really need to reverse. The only way change is going to happen is if people have direct contact with their member of Congress and really insist on something very, very different than what they're getting.
We got to hold their feet to the fire. Anyway, we're coming up on break here. We're speaking with Francis Beinecke of the Natural Resources Defense Council, and we're talking about what's going on. In fact, when we come back from the break here, we're going to talk about what's going on right now in Washington, the latest round in this charade about getting us to a sound position.
News, politics, cover-ups, government corruption. You're listening to We the People Radio Network.
WTPRN.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley on INN World Report Radio, right here on We the People Radio Network, every Sunday evening, 8 until 10 p.m. Central Time. And that was some nice, sort of energy future music playing there. And I love this. We got some good segue music, good friends. And that one, that made me feel like a bright, energy, clean future coming. And that's what we're trying to talk about tonight with our guests. Francis Beinecke from the Natural Resource Defense Council. And I'd like to open up the phone lines, good friends, 512-646-1984. If you're interested in speaking with our guests and posing a question, please give us a call. I see we've got Mark in Georgia. Mark, I'm going to ask you to hold on for a moment because I just wanted to finish up this last point. Francis, you alluded to political theater going on down in Washington right now. People are really feeling the effects of our having not done the right thing for the last three decades. When it comes, three-plus decades, when it comes to what we all knew was coming sooner or later, which was increasingly tightening supplies and increasingly expanding demands on oil. And now we're really getting bit in the butt. And isn't now the time to finally get back on track? Is that what we're getting out of Washington, or is it more of an opportunity business as usual down there?
Well, what we're getting is really political theater on the part of the Republicans. They are promoting something called the Gas Price Reduction Act, which is a complete misnomer because what they're calling for is opening up offshore waters to increase drilling. Now, you have to understand President Bush has already done away with the moratorium blocking offshore drilling, so Congress doesn't need to act at all. But they're promoting a Gas Price Reduction Act, which if the offshore areas were opened up and if those vulnerable beaches and marine reserves were opened up and made vulnerable to oil pollution, that oil would not be available to the American public until 2030. The government's own Department of Energy has said that no oil from those offshore reserves would be available until 2030. What does that do for the American consumer today? Nothing. The only way to really begin to address our addiction to oil is to promote new technologies to ensure we have the most efficient cars possible to increase the fuel efficiency of cars, which Congress has begun to do, but it could go a lot further, to demand more renewable sources of power, which Congress has not acted on, even though the production tax or the investment tax credits for wind and solar are about to expire. There are many things that could happen. They're not focusing on what would solve the problem. They're focusing on political theater that's very partisan, Republicans versus Democrats, that they think will be something that the public likes to see, but in fact won't affect the price at the pump. And I think what people want to know is, what's it going to do to their pocketbook? And this doesn't solve that problem at all.
Yeah, it certainly takes decades to kick in, or at least years and years to kick in. And what's it going to do? It's not the future. It's, you know what, there's still a little bit of oil left here and a little bit of oil left there. Let's let the oil companies make some money off it.
Tom, the other thing is, the oil companies have a lot of leases available to them already. There are over 7,000 leases offshore. They're only drilling 1,900 of them. You know, 5,000 leases are not under production right now. Why don't they get those going? What's taking them so long? Similarly, onshore, under President Bush, they've leased millions of acres of public lands in the West. A lot of these haven't been drilled yet. So the idea that every last acre, offshore and onshore, has to be made available to the oil industry when they haven't even used what they've gotten is something that, you know, from an environmental perspective, we just don't go along with. We think we need to transition to a future that is much more efficient, that makes more efficient vehicles, that incorporates public transportation, that uses renewables. Those are the things that the government, that the Congress should be talking about, and they're not. And the only way they'll start that conversation is if people in their home districts demand it. This has got to go out from Washington, D.C., into the communities where people live, where they're impacted by this, and they have to send the message loud and clear that they expect something from their member of Congress, and this isn't what they're expecting.
Well, listen, thank you very much for making that point. That's a very powerful point. There's almost 6,500 leases that are available right now today offshore that they're not even using, yet they want to go and get even more of them. They make it sound like, you know, we've tapped everything we could. Now we have to go after these additional areas. But that is not the case, is it? Okay, anyhow, listen, Mark in Georgia has been waiting on the line. Mark, good evening. How are you tonight?
Good evening. First off, I appreciate that you people love the truth and honest people make honest mistakes. Have you heard of the DVD called Global Warming, Global Governance? Do you understand that Al Gore is basically the founder of the Weather Channel is planning on suing Al Gore for presenting misleading and deceptive information and saying they've said repeatedly the debate is over. It's like, yeah, according to your agenda, the debate never really allowed anyone of a contrary point of view to present the evidence that this hypothesis has been positioned as though this is all there is to it. It can't be any other way. The debate is over. It's like, yeah, because they don't want to hear from the 9,000 PhDs that have signed a petition saying this whole thing is a ridiculous misrepresentation of the evidence. The other thing is, basically, according to, I think his name is Lindy Williams, I forget his name, it's the energy non-crisis. I want you to understand that according to the information that I've discerned, the oil industry has done what I call a Goldfinger exercise. You know, do you remember in the James Bond movie Goldfinger, where James Bond
said,
you're crazy, you can't steal enough gold for this, the heist to be worth it to you, and then he came to realize, wait a minute, you're not here to steal the gold. You're here to set off a nuclear device in Fort Knox, basically rendering the American gold supply unavailable, which means the value of your gold will increase dramatically in value. You're a genius. And that is exactly what the oil cartel, taking its orders from the big money cartel, has done, is that the last oil refinery we have produced in this country was built back in 1976. They have created artificial scarcity to make the price of oil shoot up. Right?
Well, listen, Mark, you've covered a lot of ground there. Let me go back to the first thing that you talked about. And you were talking about global warming, okay?
I got you.
And we all know what the argument is about global warming in its favor, okay? And you bring up an argument against it, but
what I'm trying to say is we need to be careful about being sold on an agenda where they're not being straightforward about the real agenda to create.
Let's talk about one thing at a time here, okay? You're talking about let's be straightforward, and I agree with you. Let's be straightforward. Okay. I see a palette of issues when it comes to the reliance that we have on fossil fuels. Global warming is only one of them. I can discount that. I can say it's totally baloney, chop that off, and I still have a bunch of serious things left about that. Number one, it's logic tells you it's of limited supply. Okay. Number two, we don't have. Eventually there will be no oil left in the planet. Whether that's sooner or later, that we could debate that. Okay, but it takes a long time to make some oil, and we're using it at a rate that's much faster than it's being made by Mother Nature. Okay, number one. Number two,
that's your assumption. I understand. You're assuming that the expression fossil fuels is legitimate when the Russians examined about the issue of basically coal is just like oil with the volatile boiled off. That's what I...
Well, okay, look, we're going on break. I'm going to ask you to both hold on.
I am standing by.
Very good. Okay. We're talking about what's going on in Washington right now with our guests. Remember, we do have a guest, good friends, Francis Beinecke. We'll be back to talk about this right after these messages. All right, good friends, welcome back. Tom Kiley here on INN War Report Radio. We're speaking with our guest, Francis Beinecke. Also, we have a caller on the line right now, Mark in Georgia. I'm going to open the lines up. They've been open for a few minutes here. Give us a call, 512-646-1984. I would like to hear from you. We're talking with George, and George brings up the fact that, in his opinion, global warming is not what it's cracked up to be. And I was trying to make the point with George that, let's just say that you're correct, George. It's not. There's still a host of other reasons why the dependence on fossil fuel is problematic. It's in the control of foreign countries and governments and cartels and so forth. We're paying $4 to $5 a gallon right now, and global warming isn't even here or isn't even a factor in that. Don't you feel that there's plenty of other reasons to get to clean and renewable? The old expression, George, remember, you ever heard that expression? You can't put a meter on the sun. That's what the real problem with these alternatives are, wouldn't you say?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Oh, okay, yeah. My name is Mark. I live in the state of Georgia, not to be confused with Soviet Georgia. All right. All I'm saying is global warming, global governance challenges the hypothesis that global warming is of human activity, okay? And beyond that, when I look at how we are being sold on this, it's like the Holocaust denier thing. I mean, it's like, to me, I just want to look at the evidence and follow where it leads. I haven't vetted all the evidence on that, but the fact that they're vilifying and making criminal charges against people who ask questions and examine historical evidence, to me, is disturbing. Okay.
Mark, and George, I'm sorry. That's going to be another show. And I'd be happy to do that. And we can put a show up about the pros and cons of global warming. But right now, we're talking about the energy policy that's being pushed through Washington right now. We're talking about the fact that gas is pushing $5 a gallon. I fill up my tank. It's $50-$60 to fill up the car. Okay. That's the kind of stuff that makes life very, very difficult for a lot of people. I don't see that situation getting any better. I know I'm looking at the Olympics. I see millions and millions of people in China that never had a car or a motorbike before, and that's what everybody wants. I'm looking at India, a burgeoning middle class in India that's coming on. I know they're heavily involved in all kinds of industry, high tech and so forth. These people are making money. They all want to have cars. We never had this. After World War II, we've been the sole, large global economy that was using all this stuff. Global warming aside, it seems to be a big problem. Francis, what are they doing down in Washington right now? They're trying to just extract.
Well, I think what
the
they're trying to do, what they're trying to do, Tom, is they're trying to, as I said, using total political theater to open up offshore areas, offshore Georgia, offshore North Carolina, South Carolina, New Jersey, New York, to offshore drilling. Now, the president has already lifted the moratorium, so in fact, Congress, without asking, without acting, it would be lifted. But, you know, the point I'm trying to make here is that even if these areas are opened up, and these areas are are valuable for a lot of other reasons, but because there are very strong beach economies adjacent to them, they have very strong fisheries when we're also in a food crisis, not only in an energy crisis. But my point is, opening up the offshore right now will do nothing to the price at the pump. And the American consumer is asking now for relief, and they're asking for long-term relief, not relief that will come no sooner than 2030 for business as usual, which is, in effect, what Congress is promising at the moment. So what I'm proposing is that Congress shifts to a conversation of a new energy future, one that really looks at new technologies, how to make cars as efficient as they possibly can be, how to operate cars using renewable power, using renewables, plug-in hybrids that could plug into a power source that comes from the sun or comes from the wind. Other countries are doing this. Denmark, Germany, Spain, they get more than 10%. In fact, Denmark gets 20% of its power from renewable energy. And in fact, the United States, Texas, is the leading state in promoting wind in this country. But we could do a lot more. We're still down in the single digits. If we could get a renewable electricity standard and get 15 to 20% of our power from renewables and develop cars that could be plugged in at night rather than burning up fossil fuel every day, that would be a very different future for the American consumer. And, you know, as you said, Tom, oil is in short supply, and there's increasing demand around the world. This is not a solely American problem, and we need to look at ways that the American consumer has choices out there, and it's not just filling their tank with oil which has been brought from someplace else, or that they, you know, are waiting for 15 years for possibly oil to be produced that isn't even guaranteed that it's out there. The future doesn't rely on oil. We've got to look for other strategies, and they're there, and we're just not moving quickly enough to get to them.
There's all kinds of stuff. I think in Northern Europe, perhaps Holland, Denmark, Germany, I believe they're doing research on tidal flows. You can make turbines underwater, and when the tide's coming in, it can spin propellers and generate energy. And it can, when the tide's going out, you can reverse it, and it can spin propellers again and generate energy as well.
Actually, Tom, there's some tidal generators in the East River in New York City right now. Small projects that are demonstration projects to see how they work. But this is the kind of innovation that people are looking to. And there's another aspect to it, too, which is there are a lot of possible job creation opportunities in the United States if we get serious about new technologies. Somebody has to build the turbines. Somebody has to build the solar cells. Somebody has to install them. Somebody has to maintain them. All these things create jobs on the ground here. And I think, you know, there's a growing interest in that around the country. There's organizations called Green for All. Governor Granholm in Michigan is a big proponent of green jobs. You know, turning people who now have manufacturing jobs that maybe are uncertain in the future to manufacturing things that we can really use here at home now to provide a different energy future. That's exciting, but that can only happen if Congress acts to put policies in place that really incentivize these new industries. I mean, remember, for, you know, more than 100 years, we've been providing subsidies to the fossil fuel industry, to the oil industry, to the coal industry. These are, you know, very robust, mature industries. Why do they need subsidies? Why don't we incentivize new industries that could really help us wean our addiction from foreign oil and put us on a more secure energy pathway? That's what we think people all around the country should be demanding of their members of Congress, who are now home in the districts because they're in recess, to good time to have the conversation.
You know, you bring up a very good point. The oil industry has been the beneficiary of all kinds of incentives and tax breaks and subsidies and so forth for perhaps since it began. I'd like to take that number, if you could possibly add it all up and then turn it around. You know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. You know, put that into, the search for renewables. I'd like to ask Mark, if you're still hanging on there, Mark.
Really? Yes, hello.
Hello, yes. I'd like to ask you, Mark, do you favor fossil fuel as a source of energy over all these other alternatives that we've been talking about? Do you think that there's some inherent benefit of using that to the exclusion of developing all these alternatives that we've been discussing?
Well, in wartime, not that I like the idea of killing people and blowing things up, but in a war, you don't say, well, we're going to attack on this front and we're going to ignore that front. Yes, by all means, we should explore all viable means. When you say fossil fuels, you're reinforcing the idea that all of these fuels, yes, we did find fossils in the coal strata, okay? That does not confer a cause-effect relationship that these fuels come from fossils. I prefer the hypothesis, not that I can really prove anything, that one way or the other, that these fuels are biological in origin. This is just the chemical composition of the earth, that there was an abundance of coal to create abundance of carbon to create coal.
Well, Mark, I ask you a simple question. I ask you, are you in favor of these things to the exclusion of everything else? That's a kind of a yes or no. I mean, fossil fuels, I'll take it back. Oil and coal, all right, and natural gas, all right, those three fuels, whatever you want to call it. Do you think that they should continue to enjoy these benefits, these subsidies and everything else, to the exclusion of more renewable things, more modern technologies that can employ a lot of people to bring them in, just like that industry has employed so many people through the benefits and breaks that it's received?
All right. One, I'm certainly not saying that we should become completely dependent on hydrocarbon fuel, carbon-based fuel, hydrocarbon-based fuel, as I prefer to call it. I am also saying that we need to back, you remember what the Rockefellers, the globalists, they got their money from Standard Oil, which was a monopoly, okay? Now, the Supreme Court ruled that you cannot use unethical means of destroying your competition, and they forced Standard Oil.
Well, listen, I'm sorry, we're going on break. We'll be right back after these messages. All right, good friends, welcome back. We're coming down the home stretch here for tonight's program. Every Sunday night, 8 until 10 p.m. Central Time, on We the People Radio Network, you can hear our program, INN World Report Radio. And we're speaking tonight in this portion of the program with Francis Beinecke of the Natural Resource Defense Council. And we're talking about what's going on in Washington. We're talking about a lot of things, good friends. We're talking about the subsidies that have been going on, the tax breaks, the subsidies, for so many decades in favor of the oil business. Let's hear from you. Give me a call, 512-646-1984, 512-646-1984. Are you good with your hands? Are you a good mechanic? Are you looking for work? How would you like to have the government take those subsidies that has been given to the oil industry all these years and give them to a company that wants to develop turbines for either tidal or wind energy or something like that, and they can hire you to do that. Put people to work, not on the old-fashioned industry, not on the buggy whips, but on the modern technologies that will get us off of this dependence on this very difficult and, Mark's opinions aside, shrinking reserves around the world of hydrocarbon fuels. Let's hear from you, 512-646-1984. How many of you think that there's a future for people to work in these new technologies? As our guest Francis Beinecke said, they need to be invented. They need to be drawn up, patented, invented. They need to be fabricated. They need to have the models made. They need to have the prototypes made. They need to be put into production. They need to be put on a production line. They need to have plant built for that, factories built for that. People need to do all these things. People need to do these jobs. Then they need to be installed, right? Then they need to have land cleared so that they can be installed. Then they have to be maintained. Right, that's all work. That's all new jobs. Money's been going to the oil industry for decades. Money out of our pockets, basically, the tax breaks and so forth. What's wrong with incentivizing things like that? Let me see what you think. 512-646-1984. What about Francis T. Boone Pickens? Isn't he basically saying what I just said in a nutshell?
Yeah, he is. He's very interesting because, you know, here's a Texas oil man who's telling the country, you can't drill your way out of this. And, you know, I think when somebody who has been in the industry for their entire career says that, you got to pay attention and listen to him. He also, you know, he's a major investor in wind. He's looking at a real opportunity to see the wind industry really take off in this country. So, you know, from two sides, I think he's somebody really to pay attention to. He's in the business. He's been in it his whole life. He's looking at the future. He's 80 years old, and he's saying, I think there's a future in renewables, and that's what I'm betting my money on. And he's doing it in Texas. And Texas is the leader in renewable wind energy, which is pretty fantastic. You know, that swath of the country from North Dakota all the way down through Oklahoma to Texas is the wind corridor in the country, and it's a part of the country that's been losing population and is looking for economic strength and development. And wind can really provide it. The other thing, and this is to your point, Tom, wind turbines are big. They are really, really big, and you can't transport them, you know, huge distances. Basically, you know, they need to be built pretty close to where they need to be installed. And, you know, that's something that could really be a growing industry all through the middle part of the country, where we have incredibly highly developed experts in technology. I mean, we have a real manufacturing base there that's looking for a future, and it could be in new technologies in the energy sector, not only in producing wind turbines, but in more efficient automobiles, in more public transportation systems so that we can get people out of cars and give them, you know, other options, whether it's, you know, subways, buses, streetcars, whatever it happens to be. There's so many ways that we need to shift the way we're using energy, and all of those create opportunities for people who can be employed in those areas. The other thing is, you know, off of the transportation sector for a little bit, but in the building sector, you know, we're burning energy in our homes, too, and we can make those much more efficient. But every building that's going to be made more efficient has to have somebody come and do it, and buildings can't move to another country. So if you're putting in more insulation or you're putting on solar panels or you're putting in a new HVAC system,
you can't outsource people coming in and building your refitting your home for all these things. Absolutely. Good point.
You can't. Listen, I mean, at your home, your place of business, all of those things are right here on the ground in the United States, and people need to work on them. And that's a big opportunity because the energy crisis is an economic crisis, too. These things are absolutely connected, and they have to be treated together. And spending more money buying oil from foreign countries or spending more money drilling for oil here that's not even going to be available until 2030 rather than investing in new things that are available now. That's where I think the conversation should be directed.
We challenged our listeners, Francis, to give us a call, and they're doing just that. So I want to get a few people in here. One more time, good friends, 512-646-1984. And we're talking about all kinds of, you know, wind power. You know, people say that I've got a lot of wind. If we put a little generator in front of my microphone, I think maybe we'll get a little more energy right there. But anyhow, speaking about that corridor, we're going to talk with Al right now from South Dakota. Al, what do you think? Have you been listening to the discussion tonight?
Tom, Francis, thanks for having me on the show. I just had a simple comment, really. I believe in what you're saying. The greenhouse stuff, well, that's questionable. But the one point that I want to make is if you get mugged, do you really care what the mugger spends your money on? What I mean by that is I don't think any of these things should be subsidized. I think the free market should pick up the pace. And it should be profitable. I understand there's a person or a group of people that are taking algae and creating ethanol from algae.
Yep.
And they're doing that completely on their own without subsidies. So I just wanted to make the point that, you know, it doesn't matter what the mugger spends your money on once he takes it from you. They shouldn't be taking the money.
We've been supporting, right, Francis? We've been supporting the oil industry for a very, very long time. And, you know, sometimes it is in the public interest to throw your weight behind new technologies, the free market of defense, for instance. You know, we need to come up with some kind of new bomb that only kills people on Tuesdays or something like that. You know, we come up with the money to develop it, no?
Well,
I think that, you know, just in response to that, I mean, if we had no subsidies, that would be one thing, and I'd agree with you. But the fact is now there's so many subsidies on the other side. The oil industry, the coal industry, the nuclear industry all have massive subsidies. So it's not a level playing field. So if you could make it level and let the new technologies compete evenly with those other technologies, that would be one thing. But that's not the way policy in this country works right now. So
and
you're not wrong, except it's very hard to shift over. And until you do, you've got to do something to give a boost to those that are, you know, that are unevenly treated now with the subsidies on the other side.
Well,
you know, I'm going to have to move on because we're running out of time. Please call back next week, though. Hopefully the topic will excite you. We've got a couple more callers. What do you guys think now, John in Texas? Let's go to you there. John, what do you think? You think it's fair to have the subsidies flow the other way? You know, certainly the price of oil and gas is so high right now, the market's probably going to take care of itself. But what do you think? You think we can put people to work with these new technologies? All right, let's try this one more time.
Yes. Hello.
There you go. I'm sorry, John. I thought I had you on. There, you're on now, John.
Okay. Yes, I think we can, but I'm not sure that we're headed in the right direction. I've recently been educated and have learned that we need to take a close look at Brazil and see what Brazil is doing for fuel. They're burning 80% alcohol and 20% gasoline. They import no fuel whatsoever. And
yeah, you know, can I just respond to that, John, in a second? I thought it was 40%, maybe it's 80%. But the thing about Brazil that's really interesting, and this is to the conversation that Tom and I were having earlier in the show, Brazil made a bet 30 years ago that they would become fuel independent, and they started investing in their sugarcane-based ethanol. It took them 30 years to get to the point where they are now. We missed that 30-year window. So they're a great example, and that's the kind of thing we need to think about is a long-term energy policy for the nation that makes us independent over time. But, you got to understand, this didn't happen overnight there. They have invested in this and made a commitment for three decades, and we totally missed the opportunity to do that. And that's why we're facing such a crisis right now. So it's a good example, and it's one we should all learn from because it shows you that you have to have a long-term, consistent policy in order to make the change really happen. You're absolutely right.
And that is a huge country, gigantic country, and a beautiful country as well. We got one more call. We got one more minute. Jonathan in Texas, it's your turn. I'd like you to be succinct if you can.
Hello, okay.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. What's up?
Well, I was calling in. You were talking about the reality or if it's realistic to assume that rebate incentives can create jobs. I actually own a solar electric installation company in Austin, Texas. And we're able to make the system work from a financial standpoint based on rebates that are given to our customers by the local utility, Austin Energy.
Well, listen, there
Fantastic.
You go. That sounds like a perfect
That's a great ending.
Use of exactly what we're talking about. Unfortunately, I'm out of time. Jonathan, call back next week. I'd love to hear more about that. Francis, thank you so much. And we'll be back in touch with you as this debate goes on through the Congress, all right?
Okay, thanks so much for giving me the opportunity.
Thank you very much for spending this time with us. Folks, we'll see you next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Central Time.
The Bill of Rights protects every American's God-given right to keep and bear arms. Now that right is being seriously undermined as legally registered rifles are being confiscated in some parts of our country. If we're not careful, we may find ourselves with no right to own guns. And that's where Gun Owners of America comes in. Gun Owners of America is in Washington every day fighting for you to keep that right. Congressman Ron Paul has called GOA the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. You need to be part of this great grassroots group of activists who are keeping the heat on their members of Congress. Find out right now how you can join. Call 888-886-GUNS and get started receiving their fact-filled newsletters and action alerts. Call 888-886-GUNS or go to their webpage at gunowners.org and help make your voice heard in Washington. Make that call right now and call Gun Owners of America at 888-886-GUNS. Remember, it's not just about gun control, it's about control.